We'll call the Senate Committee on Health Care, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy Subcommittee on Health Care Reform to order. Thank you for coming. I would like to point out that, number one, welcome to our House members that are joining us today, and appreciate their attendance. To look at the schedule and where we're going, as you know, this committee meets once a week, and so we've got a lot of ground to cover. And what I would like to have happen, and this is something that we've reviewed, is to have all of the amendments, all of the they don't have to be drafted, but the conceptual amendments be into Brian by next Monday, the 28th, conceptual. And then we will begin working from that basis. It doesn't mean that we won't consider future amendments, but we need to get our arms around this, all of the issues, as quickly as possible, and get those conceptual amendments to us so we can then begin putting things together. We have not that many meetings remaining, and then we intend to reserve time at the end of the before the cutoff. April 14th is our last subcommittee meeting, so we'll begin working back from that and try to remain keep agendas open for the 31st and the 7th for bills that may emerge out of the transformation work that's going on, and then the bill that will be forthcoming regarding a financing model for health care reform. So that will give you an idea of where we're going. In terms of today, we have invited testimony, and you'll notice on the list that Rocky and Nora will be, they're listed first, but what I'd like to have them do is to be last, so that they have an opportunity to hear the public testimony and be responsive to it. And they have a PowerPoint where they have been listening to the issues, and they will be addressing those in terms of trying to further illuminate and explain the intent of the bill. So with that, I would bring forward Gary Lauer and Sam Gibbs, if you would come forward. And the intent of this presentation today is to expose us to the technical possibilities and alternatives that may exist out there with respect to the actual creation of the exchange and the operation of it from a technical standpoint. So with that, gentlemen, welcome. I understand it's welcome to Oregon.
Yes.
Thank you.
We appreciate you coming, and hopefully the weather will allow you to get back to the airport.
Well, thank you. We're flattered to be invited. We were warned yesterday there was a blizzard. I drove at about 11 o'clock from Portland to Salem, and it was beautiful. Although it is forecast to snow tonight in San Francisco for the first time in 35 years, so we'll see how that pans out or not. But thank you. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of eHealth. We're a publicly traded company. Sam is the President of our government systems operation. We're not healthcare people. We're not insurance people. In fact, all of my background is in technology. Sam's actually an aeronautical engineer by training, or a rocket scientist, if you will. So we've taken kind of our knowledge and so on and applied it to the delivery of healthcare. In fact, the inspiration for our company years ago was to use the Internet as a way to corral this tremendous volume of text and data that is health insurance and provide an objective, unbiased venue through which people could get coverage. That's really what the company's been all about and what we are today. We are an Internet exchange. An exchange does exist. In fact, we're a national exchange. We're 11 years old. We operate in all 50 states plus the District of Columbia. We represent today over 180 high-quality health insurance carriers. In fact, we have a very high standard through which we'll bring a carrier into our platform. It's over 10,000 unique health insurance products, to give you a flavor for what this is about. We have become the largest source of health insurance in the country. Everything that we do in terms of interacting with consumers is done in a way, again, to give them an unbiased variety of products to choose from and give them a lot of tools from a technology standpoint to help them make a good informed decision. In fact, our company's mission statement, which we wrote almost 11 years ago, is to be the electronic distribution standard through which people find the right health insurance, and we underscore right. This is a paperless process. There's not a shred of paper in it. It's all electronic. As you might expect, the Internet is the backbone, so many people would use a laptop and so on. But there's many ways to deliver this. We have people today who are actually enrolling in health insurance products through handheld devices and so on. In fact, this is where the world is going from a technology standpoint. These laptop computers with keyboards and so on are just about to be antiques. It's all going into our hands. It's going to be very portable. We've been very, very present in Oregon for years. In fact, in Oregon, we support what we think are the quality carriers here as well, companies like Premier LifeWise of Oregon, Regions Blue Cross Blue Shield, Providence Health Plans, ODS, Pacific Source. What we've learned about a state like Oregon, for example, is that many parts of it are rural. Reaching out to people is different in Oregon, and getting them to connect electronically is different in rural communities than it may be in large cities and metropolitan areas. We've got a large cadre of partners that we would work through to reach people and so on. I'll come back to that in a moment as to why it's important. What's interesting about health insurance in all 50 states is that it's highly regulated. Prices are fixed by law. There's no discounting, no negotiating. In fact, in the federal legislation, the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, which was passed, there's very specific language that going forward that health insurance products have got to be priced the same. So something on an exchange has got to be the same as it would be through an agent or a broker or directly through a carrier and so on. Beside the fact that we are a direct consumer-facing company, we also license our technology, and as a result of federal health care reform, have gotten involved with several government entities to help with exchanges, and we've learned quite a bit. I hope today, if nothing else, we can just share some of this experience, and it's useful and relevant to a lot of the things that you're considering in Oregon. Part of the federal legislation required last year that Health and Human Services launch an information exchange in all 50 states. The Department of Health and Human Services put out an RFP. We were fortunate enough to be awarded that as the prime contractor. In a short period of time, we had up and running, taking our platform technology, the national exchange, which you can go to healthcare.gov today and see. It's over 400 carriers, Sam, thousands of products and so on. And it works. And we like to think it actually works quite well, and that's what they tell us at Health and Human Services and others also. We're also doing some work in the state of Florida on their exchange and doing some work on the connector in Massachusetts as well. It's our view that the exchange and exchange technologies can be very useful, will be. I will make a few statements about this in my experience that some of you may or may not agree with. One is that I don't think the exchange is going to be the marketplace. I think it's going to be a marketplace. And what we've learned in our business is that when you can give people choice and when you can give them information and knowledge, they'll make decisions, and typically they'll make good decisions. And the way to get more people enrolled, which is really the promise of this legislation, is to have good quality venues through which people can find quality health insurance. The exchanges, perhaps someone like us, perhaps some agents and brokers, perhaps carriers directly. But I think that the more of the really viable entities that we can embrace, the better we're going to be in terms of getting people people covered. We have got a lot of experience with and in technology. You don't have to spend millions of dollars, I don't believe, to go develop something here. The wheel's already been developed. It works. It turns. It rolls. It's quite effective. In fact, this technology has become the largest source through which people do get these products, and it seems to work well. I should add, by the way, that through the history of our company, Over 40% of individuals and families who have become enrolled were previously uninsured. It's something that we're actually proud of, the fact that we were able to reach so many people who have no health insurance and get them coverage. And I think that's part of the promise of using technology and so on. So I just wanted to give you that just as a bit of a primer of who we are and some of the experience that we've had. We believe that there are ways in Oregon to get efficiently and economically a very robust exchange technology in place that can serve the citizens of Oregon in a very, very effective fashion. And we think that because there are technologies out there, including ours, that do this really well, you don't have to invent it. Frankly, you could spend a lot of resources, I think, on things that might be more important, because this technology exists and can hopefully be used quite effectively in a number of exchanges. So with that, I'll turn it to Sam, who will just give you a few examples.
Sure. Thanks, Gary. just a little bit more about eHealth. Gary covered a lot of this. From a technology perspective, I want to share with you just a couple of statistics here. One of it is that the eHealthInsurance.com website today has about 15 million visitors that visit that. And as part of that, they are served up about 40 million different unique personalized health insurance quotations. And what I mean by that is that this is where they can do side-by-side comparisons. And, you know, we have spent a lot of time in the past 12 years understanding how people shop for a health insurance product, what the educational components are about it, and how to make it the most efficient way to interact with this. Let's be frank. Most people know more about their auto insurance than they do their health insurance. There's a lot of confusing terms. HMOs, PPOs, co-insurance, co-payments, et cetera, and what we've endeavored to do is to really boil that down into what makes sense for folks. And you know, we've invented a process here, that we've won some awards on. But I think the reason we won awards is because people use it and it's very effective. So what I'm going to do, a few things, is take you through some screenshots of kind of how the technology looks as far as the consumer is concerned. And then talk about some of the case studies of other government business that we have done. As Gary mentioned, we were fortunate enough to win the HHS contract last summer, so we formed a separate group in our company that focus on working with governments. That's what I do in the company. So I thought I would share with the committee some of our experiences.
Excuse me. Representative Thompson, yes. We have a place for you.
It has your name on it and everything.
Yes. Well, it did. And it will.
We heard you were coming. So.
I actually went out and looked for you and couldn't find you. So I don't.
Okay. Excuse me.
Sam, I apologize.
This is the only hearing room in the building, unfortunately. Thank you.
That's great.
Please go ahead. Yes. I apologize.
Just a side note here, this is a page from the Utah Exchange, and as a lot of you know, that exchange came up last year. It's mostly a small business exchange, a defined contribution small business exchange. What a lot of people don't know, there's a little piece of it that's for individuals and families, and so it is open to all agents and brokers in the state of Utah. We were the first one to participate in that. In fact, we were there during the rollout. And so this is just an example of what that exchange looks like. We were able to put this up very quickly. In fact, we sold our first policy on the Utah Exchange the second day it went live. So, and the reason was our technology was already built. You know, we already had a presence in Utah, and so we were using something that already existed, and we were able to get some success with it right away. But some of the things that we have learned is that when you have a really complex project or process or product, to get people to understand it, you need to boil it down into really small, simple things. As Gary pointed out, I spent virtually all my career in the aerospace industry, and we worked on really, really big projects. And you know, the way you solve big, complex problems is you break them down into really, really small components that people can understand. And that's what we've endeavored to do with our website. You know, most people can get confused really quickly. So as you look at the process that we have invented, it's very simple. This is one of the first screens. It's to get some information from our website. There's very minimal amount of information you need to put in: zip code, birth date, whether you're a tobacco user, gender. That's it. And so we have learned over the years that for people to use the Internet successfully, you need to kind of lead them along. I've spent the past 6 months going through Medicaid enrollment systems, and the contrast there to me is even though they're on the internet. I mean, the first several screens, and you guys that have gone through this, the first several screens are very daunting. There's a lot of information that they're trying to capture, and they're also asking you for a lot of information that is paper-based. Your driver's license, your Social Security card, whether you own a car, your bank account records, et cetera, you understand that. And so, you know, we've taken the approach with our technology is that we want to be electronic. As Gary has talked about, we get access to information. I'll show you some examples later. We get all the verification database information electronically. And so I think as you look at deploying exchanges, one of the things that gets real expensive about that is the ongoing maintenance of it. And if you have a paper-based system, it's really hard to scale that long-term because you have to add so much cost because it takes so much people. So by using technology, and not just putting technology up on the screen, it's easy to create this page that I have here, but we've used our 10 years' experience with user group testing and just the development of our system to make it very thoughtful and easy to use, to use for, as Gary pointed out, 40% of the people who use our website, which are uninsured. What people want to get to is that, you know, we have an internet generation, I would say, in the 21st century. And what started with younger folks and middle-aged folks now is the older generation as well. Gary didn't mention this in his remarks, but another part of our company actually has an internet website for Medicare. These are 65 and older folks. And so, you know, the internet is here. People are comfortable now with it. And one of the things that needs to be prevalent in whatever system you develop is you need to use a format that people are comfortable with. You know, who buys airline tickets today? You go to Travelocity, you go to Expedia. That format of how to present information is something that's very common to folks. Amazon.com, and I'm, you know, all these websites you all know about. And so those kinds of things are very important. And what the real trick, though, is to take something that's a commodity product like that and that experience you have, and how do you make that work for a really complicated financial services product like health insurance? And that's what we've done.
So some of the things you would think about or you'd want to think about here is when someone's going through this process, they're probably not very committed to a health insurance company brand name, with all respect to the health insurance companies. They're probably very committed and loyal and attached to their personal physician. We ask, for example, and we do this in other exchanges, tell us who your physician is. We'll show you all the products that support you. If you're a family thinking about children, indicate that so you can see all those plans that have got the kind of maternity benefit you might like. If you have children, you might want to indicate that to an exchange so this exchange can show you all of those plans or products that are going to have good physician copays and good pharmaceutical copays. And the list goes on and on. So you start to get a flavor for some of the complexity here. But the way with technology from an exchange standpoint, you want to distill it so that it works for people and works effectively.
The other component is that some folks will be very comfortable with just making the transaction totally online without ever talking to someone. But there's some folks, and maybe some of the older folks, that would like to talk to someone. And so in combination with our call center technology, you know, we have the ability for agents and brokers, if they're working with someone, to bring up the same screen on their computer as the customer is on their screen. So if they have a particular question about a product or a physician or, you know, copays or all those things, you know, you can work simultaneously, you know, remotely with the person to help them get through the process. And so what we've learned is that people like different places to go to get their insurance products from. Some like the internet, some like their local agents or brokers. And, you know, we have developed and evolved our technology so it supports both. And today in the state of Oregon, for instance, you know, we have an agent portal here that agents and brokers are using, you know, a variant of this technology today to enroll people in health insurance. This is my technical slide. I won't go into too much detail about what the technology is, but it's important to note that, especially in contrast to existing MMIS systems, is that our technology is really built on 21st century technology. We take advantage of the internet and things that are called web services. A lot of this technology for just moving information around on the internet is actually public domain technology, like our web server software, other things, Linux. You know, those things are very, very low cost. And so when you build your platform on these newer technologies. The cost is really low, and they are so flexible that they allow you to do a lot of things as far as interacting with information. So what do I mean by that? In today's environment, you know, pre-2014, if you apply for an individual and family health insurance product, you're medically underwritten. And so as part of that process, you know, the underwriting process includes checking your prescription drugs. They want verification of payment. They want verification of address. And so in contrast to a Medicaid environment where you would just hand in a bunch of paper and someone would manually go through and check those things, what our system does is electronically goes out and pings those databases. For instance, it can go to a pharmacy benefit management company and find all the prescription drugs and instantaneously bring those back. We do verification with a lot of PCI-compliant technologies that allow financial transactions. And so today our technology uses about 150 of these different databases in all parts of the country. Some of them are government databases, some of them are private databases. But the idea here is that, especially as we start to develop exchanges, that by using this newer technology for the whole enrollment and verification process, if we build it correctly, you can use, you know, scalable, very cost-effective technology so that you don't have to build another process that's very paper incentive to move forward. So, you know, we feel pretty confident that as you know, you're going to have to do eligibility, whether you're going to be eligible for a Medicaid system or SCHIP or any of those, that all of the databases that are out there today, you know, we can build those connections so it can be done in an automatic process. Now, I can spend a lot more time on the technical details of that, but in essence is, you know, the Internet and the technology behind it is here today. It's available. And why not take advantage of those as we build exchanges for 2014 and beyond?
Good question, Sam.
Yes.
The requirements that would be the verification for tax credits for the federal subsidies, is that function built in to this exchange function? Or is that something that's independent, would have to be provided essentially?
Essentially, the technology exists. I can't tell you today that we've got the verification because the Treasury Department and IRS have yet to design the actual way that it's going to go through that. We're having those discussions right now. And Senator Morse, I'm glad you brought that up because a point I'd like to make is that in terms of the promise of this legislation is to get 30 to 32 million Americans enrolled who are uninsured today. It's a great objective, and we applaud it. We were very involved in the development of all of this. One of the things I am concerned about, however, is that there is some thought in some places, and this is ambiguous in the federal legislation, in my opinion, that these federal subsidy tax credits only be available through an exchange. And our experience is that if you limit access, you're going to decrease the number of people who are going to actually benefit or become enrolled. If you have multiple venues and ways through which people can access these products and use their tax credits, you're going to get more people enrolled. And I'll give you an example. This isn't just about having an exchange or a website that's up and running. At eHealth, what we do is we've got thousands of partners. We've got people who were uninsured, who get insurance, who don't have computers, and don't have Internet access, because we do outreach through schools, community centers, churches, and so on. We feel very strongly about this. Here's a good example. One of our partners is Cargill, the largest provider of seed and feed to farmers and ranchers. These are mostly independent business people who buy their own health insurance. Many of them are managing their businesses today on the Internet. They're ordering their supplies and so on through Cargill. Through Cargill, we have something that's called co-branded. It's a Cargill e-health exchange that farmers and ranchers get their health insurance through. I'm not so sure that all these farmers and ranchers, if they were introduced that way, are going to go to a state or a federal exchange to get their health insurance. Some may, and that's terrific. Some may not. My only point is, don't we want to do things to ensure that we can expose as many people as possible to the opportunity to have good quality coverage, which is what this is all about. So being really specific about, I think that these federal tax credits need to be available through the exchange and through some other approved venues as well. And all of the electronic plumbing and so on that's required for verification and assuring that there's not fraud and so on already exists. This is not a technical challenge. It's very, very doable and works and exists today.
Okay. Thank you. Please,
yeah.
Go ahead.
You want questions as we go along, or anyway?
I would like to adjourn today at 4:30 at the latest. 20 to 5.
Yeah, we got a little drive ourselves. So.
Yeah. So, but let's field the question.
Would it be better to go? I'm just asking. Maybe it's better we hold our questions and let them go through their
if
their
you can
proposal.
Remember.
I'm writing them down.
Okay.
And that way, some of them may be answered as we go forward.
Okay.
Mine's just brief. The Utah Exchange, is that for the state or is that for the government of the state or is that just for users in that state?
Yeah, it's for small businesses and individuals in the state of Utah.
But the exchange is not operated by the state.
Does
Utah Exchange?
Yeah. Yeah, the Utah Exchange is operated by the state.
That's what
it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they let out an RFP and people bid on it and want it to build it. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll finish up. The last point I want to make here is that you see the little box over there which says carrier systems. When we endeavored to put health insurance on the internet 11, almost 12 years ago now, there were no electronic processes built inside of carriers at that point. And you know, one of the things that we've had to push on with carriers over the years is to move them into technology. As I was mentioned a few times, moving paper around is not efficient. And it's not scalable. And so as part of that, we have built electronic gateways between our technology into the carrier's infrastructure. And we've been successful with that. We have, you know, all of the carriers, all 185 carriers that are on the ehealthinsurance.com exchange and the 400-plus carriers that now operate on the healthcare.gov information portal exchange all use our electronic processing. Now, what does that really mean? If those of you that have bought health insurance or have studied it know that it's a pretty complicated product. There's a brochure. It's multiple pages. There's a lot of information in it. If you filled out a health insurance application in today's environment where underwriting takes place, multiple pages of information. And so, you know, we now have the ability that someone can go onto the technology, you know, shop for a plan, figure out which plan they want, electronically fill out the application. It is sent to the carrier's underwriting system, and immediately they get their policy number and print out a temporary ID card. And so that's been a struggle, but over the years we've built those electronic gateways. We have that in the state of Oregon today. So one of the things about our technology is that, you know, you would be able to leverage a lot of the things that we've already done in these electronic gateways by deploying, you know, this type of technology to build your exchange here. On the last few slides, I want to just talk about some case studies of some of the work we've done for government agencies. We've talked a little bit about healthcare.gov. We were awarded that contract in July 26 of last year, and due to the federal law and legislation, it was required to go live by October 1st. So we had to get 400 carriers. 185 had been using our technology, so we had another nearly 300 carriers that had to learn our technology from scratch. And we met the date, and I can't say it was easy. But I think that's a testament to the fact that we use, you know, this 21st century technology with processes that have been proven over the years and developed over the last 10 years. So, you know, when the carriers that weren't familiar with the current e-health technology were required to use it, you know, their brethren, if you will, had helped us develop over years, you know, common sense ways, you know, ways to work with their infrastructure and their IT so that they could conform with that, because they were under the same gun as we were. You know, by law, they had to have this exchange put up by October 1st, so they had to supply all the information.
You were live in 64 days?
We were, yes.
That doesn't work in government.
Well, I think, you know, as Gary pointed out, there were 7 bidders on that procurement, and we won it, and I think a big reason was, you know, we had a commercial technology already in production. So a lot of that was just modifying it for the government. But yeah, it was difficult, but yes, we did make the date. And since that time, the other thing that's interesting about that as well is that the healthcare.gov has several databases as well. So we not only use the database that we collected the information from the carriers participating, but there's other information that the carriers did not submit or submitted in other databases. So in addition to bringing that up, we also had to integrate with several other, you know, pre-existing government databases as well. And, you know, and we were able to do that as well. And, again, this is a testament to the way our system is architected using the standard web services. And so, you know, it's not like you sat a programmer down in a room and, you know, 25 days later they come back with some code that worked. You're using standards that have already that were already in existence. The other thing, you know, I think there's a lot of technical detail I can talk about that, which is unique. I think in the essence of time here, it's probably something, conversations we can have with more of your technical folks, but I think you've got the message is that, you know, because our technology was already available, you know, we met that 64-day turnaround for healthcare.gov. The next one is Health Choices Florida. And like Utah, they had some, you know, pre-APA you know, efforts going on. You know, the Health Choices Florida is not a compliant exchange today, but it really is a marketplace. And really what it's designed to do is to have a defined contribution marketplace for businesses in Florida where, if you're familiar with group health insurance today, if I'm a small group and I want to provide health insurance, then as the owner of the business, I pick the plan that works for me, and then I decide how much of it I'm going to pay for, and it's usually a percentage of premium, 50%, 75%, et cetera. Well, what Florida wanted to do was to change that and make it a defined contribution plan and have each individual employee be able to pick whatever product they want. Let's say I want a Blue Cross PPO plan. Gary likes Kaiser. He wanted a Kaiser HMO plan. You know, Senator Morris, you would like Aetna. You can get an Aetna plan. So what we did was we used our existing individual and family platform, and we partnered with Ceridian, which is a local Tampa, Florida-based company, and built this system for them. Now, this one's taken a little bit longer. We were awarded that at the end of last year, and it'll go live at the end of March of this year. But this one also includes a premium collection and payment component to it so that all the premiums are going to be aggregated into the exchange, and the premium dollars will be dispersed. So, for instance, if it's an employer and they want to contribute $300 per month to an employee's health insurance premium, the exchange will collect $300 for that. If the premium, for instance, is $400, it will also collect $100 from the employee. It'll aggregate that. Florida Health Choices is charging 2.5% as kind of a premium tax or a surcharge or however you want to define that. That money is collected. And then so the exchange collects all this money and information, and based on which products each individual bought at the end of every month, all that money is dispersed to the carriers. Now, the other thing that's interesting is it's an internet-based platform, but recognizing that people like to pay in different ways. So you can pay online, you can pay with a check. We're going to use kiosks in Walmarts where you'll be able to make your premium payments there if you want. So, you know, we've built the system extremely flexible. It's taken 4 months, not 60 days. But the reason we're able to do this is we've used existing technology. Again, we're using, these interfaces that are by standards that are already in the industry today. And, you know, this product, assuming what happens to healthcare in Florida, and, you know, Florida is the kind of the hotbed of what the judges are deciding down there, but if they choose to do so, you know, this will become a compliant exchange in 2014.
No, that's all right. No, we're on a timeline.
Okay, just a couple more. Well, look at that. There you go. That's it. We can go to questions. I can tell you guys the questions now.
I think if we have a message today is that putting e-health aside, there is exchange technology that exists. It's tried. It's proven. It works. It's being used. And I'll make one more statement. I know that Health and Human Services is sending some money to Oregon, and it's a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars, 40-some-odd million, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm sure there are going to be a number of different entities that will be interested in helping the state use that money to build an exchange and so on. That money doesn't have to be spent that way. That's much more than the technology that exists today needs or requires. I think you'll also find as you study this that the technologies exist in a way that allow you to implement this in a fairly quick period of time, efficiently, and as I said, at much less cost than what some people may anticipate. And more importantly, have something that's robust and works for people. And that's what we've always been about. We're a consumer-facing company. It's our lifeblood. If this doesn't work for consumers, if they don't buy through us, our company doesn't exist because that's how we generate our revenue and our profit. So all we think about is consumers and interaction with them and getting them into coverage that works well for them.
So,
Let's go back to the funding and how individuals or companies pay for the premiums. You say that everyone, whether they're individual or a small business, etc., the money goes into the exchange, and that exchange is the government. Is that how all exchanges work, that the money goes there and then, like you said, disperse it out then to the carriers that are in that exchange?
Well, if you let me, I think the law will allow you to have the flexibility to do that. What Florida did is formed a separate corporation, you know, a state-owned corporation called Florida Health Choices. They have a CEO, so they're managing it that way. Other states may decide to do it inside of the state, inside of some department or bureau. I think you would have the flexibility to do it either way.
And you have to get consideration of people who are federal tax credit subsidy eligible as well, because that most likely will flow directly from IRS or Treasury to the carrier. Yet if it's not 100% of the premium, which in many cases it won't be, then the insured or the consumer, that person, is going to have to co-fund as well. And somehow that's going to have to be collected and ferried there also.
Mm-hmm. Just a follow-up. So how does the Medicare piece work?
Well, Medicare or Medicaid or so today. So Medicaid, of course, that's all state and federal funded, and there's essentially electronic plumbing to handle all of that. That's all there. In Medicare, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services pays the carriers directly for those products. Then, if it's Advantage or something else, there's a small monthly payment that, of course, the senior makes. With the individual products today in the marketplace, where there are no subsidies, and the only state I'm aware of today that has subsidies is Massachusetts. I may be mistaken on that, but I think that's the case. People, of course, are paying 100% of the premium. But I think the most important point, again, is the technology exists to be able to do this a number of different ways and to flow the payments different ways and to take them from different combinations of sources as well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask a couple questions about the Florida model, because that's the one that's going to most closely resemble what we're trying to do in this state. And I know you're not up and running yet. In fact, I'm glad you're going to pilot it down there for us. You can tell me how it's working in 6 months. First off, what's the cost for your services? As a percent of premium, what does it cost to hire your services?
Okay, well, this is public information. That was a public forum. The Florida Health Choices adds 2.5% or collects 2.5% of the premium to do that. And ours and Ceridian's fee is roughly 1.61% of the premium.
I have a series of questions that allowed.
And Senator Bates, if I could, on that, with Health and Human Services, for example, there's a license fee and a cost-plus basis, so there's nothing based on any kind of a premium and so on. In Massachusetts, where we've recently had an award, there's just essentially
a
license
fee.
So I think it's going to, by the point, is going to very much vary state by state.
I have a hard time.
I will say this, that the state has recognized that maybe 2.5% is not quite enough. They may be asking for some more, depending on that. But and again, I was just sitting in the public meetings and they were discussing this.
Yeah, it was just a question of how a licensing fee can cover the services you're providing on a continuing daily basis, but that's another discussion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have to understand, too, Senator Bates, is that that exchange today is not really a federally compliant exchange.
I know.
It's really a marketplace, so it's not really an apples and apples comparison.
I agree. The Florida one sounds much more close to what we're looking at here in the future.
I think Massachusetts is probably the closest versus
really
what Florida is. Yeah, Florida doesn't have any Medicaid or SCHIP components to it yet, and so that's it's just the comparison marketplace for commercial insurance.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll make an assumption here. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong. I looked at the web page you showed us for individuals buying into this exchange program you have. Small employers would look similar to that. They list their employees. They have to list their ages, gender,
correct,
that sort of thing. And
yes, sir.
Click through, and then they have some options pop up for them.
That's right.
Works?
That's correct.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
And I want to go back again to the Florida model, maybe not.
Yeah.
We're still struggling a bit with what we do with these tax credits, if they are in fact available to us in 2014 and the feds don't change their mind or the program doesn't change. The issue you brought up of in and out of the exchange is a big one, and who knows if that's going to happen or not. That said, you felt that the credit would flow directly to the carriers, and then you would be responsible for notifying individuals or small businessmen, small businesses, what their copay was on that. Copay is probably the wrong word. Their percent of premium would be
right.
on that. Have you had experience doing that yet?
Yes, so I wish now that I know that you're really interested in Florida, I wish I had some screenshots from that. But essentially what happens is that via this defined contribution model, and you can see very easily that a subsidy would be another funding component of that. Once the individual person goes through and picks their plan, then a screen pops up and it shows them the total premium, the contribution that the employer is making, and then what their contribution is making. And then it would be really easy to add another line item that said, well, this is the contribution that your subsidy is making. And so, I think the basis of that infrastructure that we're building in Florida, but it's not exactly that yet because it doesn't exist.
I hope this is my last question. One of the issues that we have in our insurance industry here in the state, and it's going to be a problem for the exchange, is when people don't pay their premium, drop their enrollment, or they roll to a different company, and yet the service was provided on the previous company, mm-hmm. and quite often providers are caught in the middle of that, and
yeah.
the insurers are caught in the middle of that. It's a real serious problem, and sometimes can be very expensive. So do you have a way of tracking whether or not someone has been enrolled, not enrolled, and notifying a carrier immediately and a provider immediately on those issues?
We have the technology to do it. I can't say that we do that today because it's not required, because we don't really have a guaranteed issue environment in most states. But yes, the technology exists. In fact, with many of our platforms, we're deeply embedded into what we call the back office of these carriers as well, electronically, which is what we would need to do. And of course, we want to know several things. You know, has someone been making their payment or not? Are they still subsidy eligible, which would probably be an annual kind of thing? And by the way, the processes for that have yet to be defined, how these subsidies are going to flow. Is somebody moving from one plan to another? Because in this guaranteed issue environment, as you well know, I may decide that my physician may leave the plan sponsor that I have and go to another plan, and I want to follow my physician, not the plan, and I'll move. So all of the technology exists to track all of that. We don't do all of that today, but it can be done, yes. And it is complex and creates some very interesting issues, I agree.
Yes, and Senator Bates, I will add to that this Florida implementation is rolling out in phases. This first phase that will go live next month doesn't have that capability. What we are adding in a phase this summer is a dashboard, if you will, that the exchange personnel will have access to, the employer will have access to, and the carriers will have access to, which essentially gives you that information. This is the employee, this is the premium, this is that the payment's been made, et cetera, and then the technology is built so that you can add business rules to that. So, and these haven't been defined yet, but for instance, you know, there's the technology available that, you know, if someone misses a payment for a month, what happens? Or do they have a grace period? What is that grace period? And what series of actions would happen after that? So we'll be building those things as we deploy that in the future. But we've contemplated, you know, that very issue is that. And the good news here is that since everyone's working from a common database, I mean, all the views are looking at the database in real time, so that as things change, if, you know, we're on the screen and we're saying, you know, Sam Gibbs has missed his payment, oh, he just made a payment, it would show up instantly with folks, so there's no latency at all in that. So that's the good news about using a technology platform like this, is that, you know, all the stakeholders can have instant access and information available to them.
Okay. One more, please.
One more.
I want to pivot a little bit, and I think it follows the same discussion. From the provider's point of view, the doctor's office, the hospital, the freestanding health center, whatever it is, will they have access to this information when the patient is standing in front of them? They can look and say, yes, you're still insured. This is what your copay is. This is what your deductible is. This is where you're at. Do you have that kind of technology available yet?
You know, that technology is more in the health information exchange component of it. Several carriers have that today. This exchange for Florida doesn't contemplate that specifically, but to the extent that that could be integrated into what the carrier databases have, that's probably a future phase. I understand exactly where you're going to that, but this exchange is not contemplating that currently.
It's a great question. It's something that we've thought about quite a bit in our business. In fact, I have my iPhone right here, and we've actually got an application under development called My eHealth Card. And what it is I no longer have to carry my card for my provider. It's all right here. I showed it to the physician. They can use it electronically to confirm that, in fact, I'm current, what the copay is. I can actually process the copay here on this device through my ATM and so on. So I think it's something we're actually very interested in, and I think in the next few years, as we hopefully see more and more of this move to a paperless transaction, this just becomes the common way through which you interface at the physician or the provider office.
Just a quick comment on that. As a physician, don't show it to the physician, show it to my staff.
Yeah, I understand.
I go, duh, you know, but they would understand it instantly, and this is what they are looking for. So thank you for your answers.
Now, on the e-health commercial side, we do have an instance of our technology used by Group Health Co-op up in the state of Washington, up in Seattle, where our enrollment technology is integrated. If you're familiar with them, they're an HMO-type program.
I visit them once a year.
Yeah, and they have all of this integrated. In fact, you Physical can log example. On to their system. You can see your lab reports. You can schedule doctor visits. You know, you can do the enrollments through us. So we have a commercial application of that.
Senator Bates, the reason a physician may be interested in this is he or she is going to be paid faster.
Well, maybe I better learn. Yeah. Maybe I get paid, too.
Okay. Representative Thompson.
On exactly the other end of that spectrum, we have a lot of rural parts in the state and whatnot, a lot of variation among potential clients. Does this system allow for a mail-in payment or making a payment through a local insurance agent, or what are the low-tech options?
Yeah, all of those, any tech options would be available to it. Okay. And in Florida, we are supporting all of those today.
Okay. In fact, Representative Thompson, one of the things that we've tried to do over the last several years is help brokers and agents not have to go to someone's home, open the briefcase on the kitchen table, and have all this paper. Rather, go to someone's home, if that's how they choose to do it, with a laptop or with some other device, and if they want to take it. We do that in our business. We try to encourage people to pay electronically and sign electronically. Some don't want to. It's fine. They'd mail us the check or whatever, and we take that and we process it through the system. So, yes, all of that can be done. And you're right, we find it there are some people who are just more comfortable transacting that way. That comes back to my point earlier about giving people choices in terms of how to access and get enrolled, because, frankly, different people have got different different desires and different ways they want to conduct this. We know that.
Thank you. I do have one last question. One of the concerns is the uncertainty at the federal level. Will we, in fact, have a federal plan? Will the courts overturn it?
Right.
In this budget environment, will it be funded in the future? Will that stay intact? And I guess my question is that if we invest in this, we get it started, and that circumstance changes, will this platform survive on its own by virtue of its benefit to the public?
Well, I can tell you this. Our business, eHealth, is a publicly traded company, profitable, lots of cash, no debt. We continue to enroll people every day, and the business works well. So we're certainly not going anyplace. In fact, I'm more optimistic than ever about this technology as a great way to get people access and get more people enrolled. And I think irrespective of healthcare reform, whatever happens with this legislation, perhaps it exists in 2014 as it exists today, perhaps it doesn't. I still think that state exchanges and involvement and so on make an awful lot of sense, but it may be another reason why millions and millions of dollars perhaps should be considered about being invested now rather than approaching it some other way to be able to accommodate that as well. We're very close to this, and we've got a team in Washington, D.C., and I have no idea where this is going to go. It's the most extraordinary thing I've ever seen. We're assuming that the legislation will continue to exist. It's the law of the land. We think it's got some really good components. We think the exchange component is one of those. I would think that exchange technology would benefit many people in many states, irrespective of what the legislative environment is.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Very informative.
It was helpful.
Tom Holt and Dan Field. And then after that, Patrick O'Keefe and Mary Jo Weaver, and then Lisa Trussell and Elise Brown. That's our field of...
Chair Morrison, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon, and here today on behalf of our roughly 750,000 members. The request that I got through Brian from you, Mr. Chair, was to expand a bit on some of the points we made very briefly last week, and so my intention today is to dive into five areas, a couple minutes on each one in the interest of time. One, governance and transparency. Second, the market role of the exchange. Third, the exchange policies and its purposes or mission. Fourth, the financial sustainability and accountability. And last, the issue of the individual mandate and some suggestions there. But I want to be clear before I dive into that, that we think the Dash 1 is really just an excellent start to this process over the next few weeks. Some good work has gone into that. And our aim is to be helpful and work to improve upon that so that we get a good product out of this committee by the end of the process. So anything I might say, I should. I don't want to be seen as being taken as a criticism of that work, because we think that we have a good foundation to go on. First, about governance, the draft does a good job, I think, as many of these bills that envision creating a board or a commission or something do, of identifying that we need to have some different perspectives and interests. What's different here is it's a business oversight board, and makes it a little different, I think, from our traditional approach where, you know, if we're making up a commission, we're going to have so many ducks, so many beavers, and a couple of referees. We want to have some different perspectives, but having some business talents and skills on that board is really important to its success. And so in the current draft, we see a couple of things that we would suggest tweaking. I don't think this was necessarily intentional, but there's sort of a doubling up of the health authority, where there's one health authority director member, and then there's someone from the health policy board. And it's hard to envision both of them surviving in that spot if they are in serious disagreement. So we would suggest picking one or the other and turning that one freed-up seat into just an at-large appointment of the governor. The other suggestion we would make is to change and kind of balance out. We have two consumer members who must be part of the board, and a maximum of two people who have some connection to healthcare delivery or insurance industry on the board. We would suggest strengthening that and make it a must, with one of those being a certified actuary, so that you have someone on that board who has the real good knowledge of how the numbers fit together and an obligation to be objective about it by virtue of their certification. Question? About transparency, we would suggest, although this is a public corporation, that the board and its advisory committees be subject to public meetings law. That just strikes us as being sort of the Oregon way to do things in the open. And as the bill now stands, Section 16 gives the executive of the board a tremendous leeway to keep things secret that perhaps ought not to be. Understanding that some things must be kept confidential, proprietary contractual information, that sort of thing. So we'd suggest kind of narrowing that language. In terms of the market role of the exchange, we like in Section 12 that it envisions kind of a step-by-step implementation of the small groups, where we start with the 2 to 50s and then the 51s to 100s. That would avoid the unpleasant experience we had with premium costs when we combined the 2 to 50s a few years ago. The other piece there that There's a line that seems to refer to, and it's a discretion of the board to bring in other groups. And, well, the others would be larger groups and self-funded, perhaps, who are not allowed into an exchange under the federal law until 2017. And so just for clarification purposes, we would suggest putting a date in there just to be clear about that. And that brings me to Section 13, which takes a different approach and sort of says, let's all jump in with both feet. We would not recommend that approach for the reasons I just mentioned. And so unless there's a good reason otherwise, we would suggest taking that section out altogether to improve it. There is on page 12 in Section 12, sub 8, a reference to the exchange taking on the idea of premium parity in and out of the exchange. As worded, it strikes us as being fairly broad. But we suggest a fairly easy fix, because if the intent is to say, look, if we're selling product A in the exchange and we got product A outside the exchange and they're the same product, well, of course, then the premium should be the same. So I think just putting in a word identical there would fix that. Similarly, back in Section 3, there's a reference to the exchange having a goal of coming up with standardized health benefit options. Again, our read is that this is going somewhat beyond the requirements of the federal law. And from our point of view anyway, that standardization may not necessarily be a desirable way to go, because what tends to happen in the marketplace is that we end up with a richer, more expensive benefit when everything has to be the same than we might otherwise through competition amongst the plans. And we would agree with the goal of, you know, keeping the costs as low as possible, and, you know, let us and Kaiser duke it out about who's got the better plan within the exchange.
We'll have more discussion about that, yeah. Because that's a major issue for consideration.
Yes, it's a key policy issue. And then last in this area about the markets, there's a suggestion again in Section 12 that sub 4, I think, is putting some limits on the number of qualified plans. We agree that the exchange has a role in setting a floor on what plans need to look like in an exchange, so that it's providing a good service and meeting the market. But we would suggest kind of a different approach to that of perhaps considering a minimum number in each area of the state, so that you know, consumers do have choice within the exchange. And there may be other ways of approaching that, but that would be our suggestion. And then the area of sort of the policies and purposes of the exchange, in some of the language about the mission, a little bit of it strikes us as just being not badly vague, but a little vague. One in Section 2, there's a couple of spots. One, there's a reference to other applicable federal laws in addition to referring to the Accountable Care Act, and it raises the question, well, which ones and who decides what's applicable? So we suggest either, you know, figuring out what the what needs to be cited in our statute to cross-reference or clean that up a little bit. I think we, and then a little bit later in Section 2, I think it's little letter D, there's sort of an expansive, aspirational sort of mission that I think if all of us were in a room, we'd say, yep, we like that. It's quality and you know, lower cost and those kinds of things, and I think that's language that probably came out of the Health Policy Board. You know, at a big picture level, yeah, we all like that stuff, but in terms of focusing on what's the mission of an exchange, we think it's probably trying to bite off a little bit too much, and we would suggest something more like to be clear about the exchange's role in the marketplace, which we would suggest is something like being a facilitator and facilitating an exchange that is financially sustainable, that fosters a competitive marketplace within the exchange and supplements the market outside the exchange. So we're just real clear that the exchange business is getting plans in the exchange and working with the marketplace and not trying to solve all the problems in healthcare through that one mechanism. Understand the exchange needs to, you know, also work with the authority and the other efforts that we have going on through the state and privately in that area. And this is a nit, but we also think there should be room. We refer to insurance, but there are products that match with insurance that promote wellness that get at kind of the long-term problems like obesity and things that people may or may not have the ability to influence themselves in terms of healthcare costs long-term. So we'd suggest some language be put in Section 2 that part of the mission should be to combine or to encourage long-term changes in health-related behaviors by offering wellness-related products. And similarly, to add a couple of points to suggest that the exchange also encourage innovative product designs above and beyond essential benefits, and that it rely upon essentially the market and consumer choice rather than necessarily prescribe particular benefit designs beyond setting an appropriate floor in the exchange. And then in relation to financial sustainability and accountability, I think this is just really critical for the public corporation. I think the virtue of a public corporation is it's going to have, you know, profit and loss accountability inherently. But there are some questions of how, you know, how do we actually fund it? Obviously, the fees that it assesses need to be sufficient to fund its immediate operations, but there also needs to be a small margin to reinvest in technology or whatever other infrastructure the exchange may have so it can be up to date at all times. But in the fees language in the bill, there's no particular limit on the exchange fees, and it would have the ability to collect fees from insurers, TPAs, and self-funded plans. And there's just a couple of questions there. One, I think we would suggest figuring out what an appropriate target level would be for margin of the exchange's operation off its fees. We'd suggest something in the range of 1%. And that's not a number picked out of the hat, but as a nonprofit, if we take on risk, and the exchange, I would assume, would not, our target is between 1% and 2% on an annual basis, which allows us to build capital and reinvest, but so we have capital to pay the big claims when they do come in. We might also consider, how, if Medicaid enrollment is going to be a function of the exchange, or at least for some people in the exchange, and managing when they go on and off Medicaid, they come into the exchange arena and back to Medicaid, that perhaps a mechanism for an intergovernmental transfer to fund that piece out of the Medicaid budgets should be considered.
Do you have these written now?
We will have these all reduced to you in a memo form and in conceptual amendments by Monday, sir.
Okay. Well, I'm concerned in the interest of time and some folks.
I have about a minute and a half,
okay,
if you'll indulge me. The question around fees in terms of fairness is really, if those in the exchange are being assessed a fee and those outside the exchange are being assessed a fee, is it fair for a fee to be assessed on those who are not allowed to participate in the exchange, or those who may have come to the exchange with a proposal and are saying, no, you don't quite meet our standard? There's a policy issue there that needs to be addressed. And just last, on the individual mandate, you heard me talk about this last week, but this is a crucial piece of the federal reform that is now in some doubt. And we would suggest that some thought be given to a Plan B. And I think there are some options that the state has so that we can have a pathway that, if for some reason the mandate either goes away or is substantially weakened, it's sort of automatic and we can proceed and not stall getting this thing up and running. And those things might be things like a state mandate that could pass constitutional muster. It could have a mandate that allows people to opt out without penalty, but they can't come back for some period of time. So there's that kind of penalty for opting out. It could require people to post a bond if they're not showing a proof of insurance. So something substantial like $500,000 or $1 million to cover a catastrophic kind of claim. Or you can take an immunization approach and say, okay, you want a license or some other state privilege, you got to show us that you have health insurance. You want to be in school, you got to have the health insurance. Or whatever those, but those are all possibilities that are in the literature. We're not suggesting particular solutions. Not going to step on that landmine, thank you.
You were very close. Almost lost a leg.
So we don't have a particular recommendation for you on that. But we do suggest that you spend some time really considering what Plan B might be, because we are entering a world of guaranteed issue, and we don't want the death spiral of a guaranteed issue and nobody there in the pool except those who say, I'm now going to have a claim. So with that, we will have this reduced to some writing for you in the next day or so, and we'll go from there. And we appreciate the opportunity to come before you and try to dig a little deeper in a short time.
Thank you.
Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dan Field from Kaiser Permanente. Tom and I don't have to run for office, so that's why we come up with ideas like $500,000 bond instead of buying health insurance.
I I wouldn't run on that platform if you decide to, by the way.
No, I know. Thank you. Good advice. I just have three quick comments, really. We do have 4 pages of single-spaced testimony that I will not read. I'll give that to committee staff when we're done. It's called the Kaiser Permanente Exchange Design Principles and really lays out a lot of the stuff you already know, but also goes into a little more detail about what we think are some of the critical factors for a successful exchange. I thought in the interest today of framing the debate that you're going to have or the dialogue you're going to have in the coming weeks, I'd touch on 3 quick issues. One of them is quality. Section 3 just gives very passing reference to quality standards and certification of health plans. I would really encourage you to spend a lot of time diving into that. If you look at the materials from the transformation team that I know all of you are involved with, just from last night, one of the early pages talks about accountability in a transformed health system, and it has broad categories. Are people getting the care and services they need in the manner they want? That's a general service measure, and there's a whole series of measures that go in there. Does the quality of care and services provided meet our benchmarks? That's a general quality bucket, a whole series of quality measures that go into that. Are care and services being provided efficiently? Again, a cost measurement, whole series of measurements and criteria that go into that. At a minimum, I would encourage you to put some of these standards into the wording of the legislation. And beyond that, I think you can start to dive in and provide specific measurements. The goal is not to limit participation in the exchange. The goal is not to exclude plans who are committed to the exchange. The goal is to actually leverage some of the work that the Health Fund Board and the Health Policy Board, and dare I say even the Bates-Westland Commission did several years ago. That work has been going on for years. It's terrific work. The question is, when are we actually going to now start leveraging the state's purchasing power to achieve some of those aims? And I would argue that there's a real disconnect currently in the draft of 99 and the work of the transformation team, the Health Policy Board, the Health Fund Board, et cetera. Let's start to integrate those. Let's bring the work that we've done into this legislation. The temptation may be, and the health authority may encourage you, to leave that for the development board and to leave that for public corporation board. And I would encourage you not to do that. I think you need to set some general parameters. You may not need to specify every single measure and metric, but you can certainly be more specific than we are currently in Senate Bill 99. And we're glad to help you with suggestions and language. There's no reinventing the wheel, folks. You've done this work over the last few years. CMS has a 5-star rating that mixes services and quality. You're all familiar with that. So these measurements are up and running. The question is, how do you deploy those in an exchange and say to the Kaisers, Providence, Regents, and others of the world, we need you to be serious about what you bring to this exchange and the investment you make in changing the delivery system.
We would invite your crafting and recommendation, certainly.
Be glad to do that. 2 other quick comments, one on the assessment. I think generally we're headed in the right direction there. I would encourage you, you're going to get a lot of pushback from others about the assessment. I would encourage you to hold firm and insist that A, it's broad-based, B, it's transparent. Remember that as legislators, you're responsible not only for the stability of the exchange, but also the non-exchange market. So you don't want to do anything with that assessment that's going to incentivize plans or individuals to move in or out of the exchange based on that assessment. Third, an issue that I haven't heard a lot about in Oregon, it has come up extensively in Washington and maybe other states, subscriber choice, employee-level choice. One of the key value propositions for an exchange is the ability to provide subscriber-level choice of health plans. Currently in the Oregon market, 85% of small companies, anybody under 200, offers only one choice of a health plan. And so one of the key value propositions of the exchange is that you can provide the kind of choice in the exchange market that's not available outside of the exchange. Now, again, there hasn't been a lot of talk about limiting that, but there may be at some point somebody who says it's too complicated, it's too difficult, we want the employer to make the choice. We strongly encourage you to resist that and to make sure that the value proposition that the exchange can bring to the market is fully maximized. Otherwise,
yes.
I suspect there's not much discussion because it's so hardwired into all of our assumptions. I mean, when we talk about exchange, that's one of the major things. I mean, if you think it's not, or you want to suggest making it explicit, but I don't think anybody has any disagreement with that. But
I agree. I'm responding to 2 things. One, the dialogue in other states, including the dialogue we're in Washington, where there's some pushback on subscriber-level choice.
Hmm.
And two, there is some language in the federal law that implies you states can go either way on this. That's a legal analysis I won't get into, but I just want you to be aware that that's a key value proposition for the exchange, and let's stick with our existing assumptions.
I'm very intrigued with the capacity of having a cafeteria choice for small employers, not just whether you have within the plan choices, but between plans. That's a very intriguing option. Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for both Dan and Tom. Danny mentioned those. We have measurements here and measurements there. One of the things we're hoping to do is kind of narrow down and define what we have to measure to get results without having to create this whole new plethora of things we have to measure and things we have to report. I mean, I think that's kind of key to this is simplification to as much as possible. So if you guys could give some thought as to what you think the key fundamental measurements are and get that to us, I think that would be helpful.
Yes. Yeah. Anybody else?
Stole my question, but we're looking for benchmarks and then the metrics.
Yeah.
And, you know, mm-hmm. it's the KISS simple. You know, keep it simple, but straightforward, 2030, not 500.
The CMS star rating that just went into effect for Medicare Advantage plans, and there's a heavy penetration of Medicare Advantage plans in Oregon, particularly in the urban areas, I realize. But that's the five-star rating system you've heard about. It's a mixture of service scores and quality scores using things that Senator Bates and Representative Greenlick, all of you probably are very familiar with. HEDIS, quality scores, CAPS, which is service scores. Do I get a quick appointment? Do people answer my phone call at the physician's office? You know, and all of us perform differently on those. I'm not saying Kaiser's terrific on all those or Regents, but the thing is you're setting some aspirational goals and you're asking everybody to compete and provide value based on some commonly shared goals, and we're glad to provide those to you.
And we would appreciate that. Okay. Thank you very much. We have someone here that has traveled in excess of 100 miles, and if they did that, they did it in snow.
I see you before you go.
Patrick O'Keefe and Mary Jo, is it Weavers? Would you like to come up, please, too?
Chair Morris, members of the committee, my name is Patrick O'Keefe, and I'm here on behalf of the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon and Idaho. I'm an owner of Cascade Insurance Center, which is located in Bend. I've been an insurance agent in Oregon for over 18 years, and while our agency is an all-lines agency, my specialty has always been health insurance. I'll keep my comments very brief as I have supplied written testimony, and I know you've heard from a few of my colleagues already. An insurance exchange has the potential to dramatically alter the delivery and management of health plans in the state of Oregon. And I appreciate that one of your goals is to ensure this is a positive experience for everyone who is either required to or chooses to utilize the exchange when purchasing their plan. Without it, this will be an uphill climb to attract people to the exchange. And assuming there are other options, realizing a reasonable retention rate within the exchange will also be a challenge as the years go by. The insurance exchange is going to be reality. The questions are, what will it look like, how will it function, how successful will it be, and how will that success be measured? We have no choice but to make it a success. Anything less is unacceptable and would be a waste of time and precious resources. Last year, I had the opportunity to participate in the technical work group that was formed by the Oregon Health Authority. The work group was convened specifically to provide input regarding many of the concepts regarding the exchange, which included what the agent's role might be. When small group health insurance reform took place in the early and mid-90s, many in our field thought the sky was falling, the bar was being lowered, our relevance diminished. We quickly discovered that while how we function on a daily basis had changed, the need for our expertise grew because the number of small businesses that now had options available to them also grew tremendously. And what both business owners as well as many individuals needed was for somebody to sit down with them face-to-face to work through the possibilities. The insurance exchange is going to once again bring changes to our industry. And yes, there will be resistance to these changes from some who are hoping to hold on to the way things used to be. However, I'm proud to say that the majority of my colleagues who truly consider themselves professionals are ready to do the work that needs to be done and are willing to adapt in order to help those clients whose relationships we value so much. Does the bar need have to be raised by instituting additional requirements for agents to function in the exchange? Are there other factors that need to be considered to ensure the quality of the experience that the expertise that our consumers have come to expect is not diminished? Quite possibly. However, we bring a unique set of skills and knowledge that would be hard to replicate. The skills will continue to have value and relevance in the new world of the exchange. And I'll go so far as to say that they may be a critical element in the success of the exchange. We are a workforce capable of bringing the exchange the success it needs to be an effective tool in the transformation of our state's healthcare system. How you perceive the agent's role may very well be critical in how far and how fast we can make these changes.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Mary Jo, thank you for coming. My constituent.
Yes, thank you.
So pay attention.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay.
Chair Morris and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important issue. I'm a small business owner. My name is Mary Jo Weavers. I own Aquatic Biology Associates in Corvallis. And I support the bill to set up an Oregon Health Insurance Exchange, and I would like to see a few improvements to make it even better. My husband and I incorporated his small environmental consulting business in 1995. We are a small business with 4 employees and 4 subcontractors. We analyze macro and vertebrate samples, which are insects and bugs and crustaceans, and freshwater ecosystems to determine environmental impacts. When I left my job with the state in 1995, one of my main concerns was obtaining health insurance for my family. That was a benefit that I enjoyed while employed at Oregon State University and with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We were able to purchase health insurance through the Northwest Environmental Business Council in 1995, a trade association which we joined for that specific purpose. The cost of our health insurance was reasonable because we were included in a pool of other small business owners such as like ourselves. And our health insurance actually paid a portion of our family's medical costs, such as preventative checkups and vaccinations for our kids. After a few years, this business council no longer offered health insurance. It had too small of a pool of members, and the insurance costs were just too great for it to offer this service. So we had to look elsewhere. And since 1999, we've had private health insurance. We have little time to spend researching and shopping for insurance, so every few years I sit down and review with our financial planner and our insurance agents so we can look into insurance companies and policies that can help lower our costs. As you can see in the bar graph that I included with my written testimony, our monthly premiums go up every year, which is just not sustainable or affordable for a small business such as ourselves. And in order to keep our costs down, we have elected to switch to policies with very high deductibles and no preventative care. And this means that our out-of-pocket costs have skyrocketed over the same period of time. We do not go to the doctor unless it is an emergency. We would like to see a health insurance exchange that can pool together self-employed and small business owners like ourselves, just as the Northwest Environmental Business Council did for us back in 1995. The exchange can pool our buying power and negotiate better deals, just like bigger businesses and state and federal agencies do right now for their employees. And we would like an exchange that would push for better care, preventative and routine health care to keep people healthy and out of expensive emergency rooms. An exchange would reduce the amount of time that I have to spend reviewing our health insurance needs and visiting with my financial planner looking for a better deal every couple years. There are a few improvements that I would like to see in Senate Bill 99-1. First, the bill should direct the exchange to negotiate for a better deal with insurance companies. I know that when our business bids on a job, we have to show that we can provide the best service for a low cost. The exchange should push insurance companies to do the same. And secondly, I would like to see an exchange that's accountable to me and all the other businesses and consumers in the exchange. The board should not have people on it with conflicts of interest. They should not be on the industry payroll and set the rules for the exchange at the same time. And lastly, the exchange should be open to businesses with more than 50 employees right away, and not just limited to businesses with up to 50 employees. This will make the exchange bigger, and it will get the benefits out to more consumers. While many businesses have attempted to self-organize into larger groups through trade and other associations, such as the one we joined, we cannot get big enough and strong enough to do it on our own. And that is why it is so important that the legislature set this up. You have the power to make this happen. And then finally, in conclusion, I'd like to say that I think Senate Bill 99-1 is a good start, and I'm so glad that Oregon is looking at putting an exchange in place to help small business owners like myself. And thank you for letting me testify in front of you today. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming across the mountain. I imagine it was not pleasant.
I was not.
Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We will, Lisa Trussell and Elise Brown. And we're at 25 after 4. And I would suggest that if Rocky and Nora are flexible to come back, which I suggest you are, we would.
You got 2 seats.
But it's not tonight. So.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Elise Brown, representing America's Health Insurance Plans, and I'm here today to offer some feedback on Senate Bill 99 and the establishment of the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange. AHIP is the national association representing 1,300 health insurance plans, providing coverage for more than 200 million Americans. And I will be very brief today, since a couple very few points I wanted to highlight have been brought up by previous AHIP members, and you'll hear from another AHIP member here shortly. I did, though, want to take you up on the offer to get back to you with some hard, fast language by the end of the day Monday, so appreciate the opportunity to do that. But until then, here's a couple points. Number one, already brought up, standardization, referred to in Section 3. AHIP opposes standardized health plan options. We believe the option should be the four actuarial value categories that are already established, silver, bronze, and gold, et cetera, and that carriers should be able to provide these products that meet the requirements. Second, in the area of operations of the exchange referred to in Section 12, small 4, we believe the exchange should not have the power to limit the number of plans in each level. In small 8, we mentioned the premium parity piece inside and out, and we believe that that is an OID function through the rate review and market conduct process. In the small 9, setting up the selective contracting, we believe the exchange should not be authorized to enter into the contracts for offering of coverage. Any carrier that meets the coverage terms they establish must be allowed to offer contracts in the exchange. And last, the assessment piece, and I'm glad to hear that there's still going to be a lot of conversation going forward on that, referred to in Section 20. AHIP is concerned with the proposed assessment as it's laid out now, as it, we believe, not transparent to the public. The assessment on all insurers in the definition that's in the bill would include self-insureds and reinsurance. And yes, it's spread out across the board, but essentially, as mentioned earlier, you'd have products outside the exchange paying for those inside the exchange. So we would look to work with you to offer language that would assess only those inside the exchange. So again, a couple quick points. Wanted to make sure they were mentioned on behalf of AHIP, and we'll work with you by the end of the day Monday to have more language. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
members of the committee. I'm Lisa Trussell, representing HealthNet Health Plans of Oregon, and I have a triple aim: to be brief, informative, and not offend anyone.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
And remember, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Thank you. Most of the points have been made up, but I would just stress that if we're looking at setting up the exchange as a quasi-public corporation, that we want to be very careful to make sure that the regulatory functions stay with the insurance division, such as ensuring that qualified plans provide meaningful choice on page 2, which I'll have this all written out, that we file rates and forms with the insurance division. And they shouldn't approve any carrier to sell who's not qualified to sell in the state. And also it gets to what the role is of the exchange, and we think it should be an aggregator of hooking up folks with products. We were happy to hear from eHealth today, because some of the meetings I attended where the Oregon Health Authority had gone out to the town halls kind of implied that in order to keep it simple, you had to have very few choices. And I think eHealth showed today that there's many ways electronically to sort it. A lot of people are like myself. All they want to know is their doc in the plan? As it relates to quality, we think that there should be quality standards, but rather than excluding a licensed carrier who doesn't meet the quality standards, maybe you take the 50 quality standards or however many, and then indicate where each carrier is on those quality measurements and what their premium is, and then let the consumer decide what they want to pay for. Oh, and the fees issue is a big deal. And I understand from the federal legislation it allows, and I don't think it would prohibit you from charging carriers that aren't in, but the federal legislation allows for charging fees to the carriers who are participating, and we would suggest that that be implemented in Oregon. And one of the reasons is that you're supposed to get the exchange to be self-sufficient, and tacking on a surcharge to somebody who's not wanting to buy in there is going to raise their rates. So at some point, I think when you compete on quality in that, the exchange will attract people on its own merit as opposed to the fee on it. And then the last things I wanted to mention, and some of it's come up on the design of the board, but one of the things I think that you should be keep in the back of your mind, if you would, is that we have in Oregon, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, which has a board. And as I understand it, they've been a very successful board, and they have people in the industry on the board. And in light of the fact that everybody would have only one vote, it might be a policy decision to determine whether you would want an equal representation on that, or at least check with Mr. King about how the composition of the OMIP board has worked, because I understand it's been a very successful board. And I will get written with my... I found out I'm part of the older generation from eHealth, because I prefer paper and not even electronic notes, but I will have my marked up copy and notes to the committee administrator by Monday. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for coming. And I would remind you once again, Monday is the... we're creating a deadline. It's not hard and fast, but...
don't say that. What was that?
You can have an idea after Monday, but it might... may or may not be considered, okay.
If it's a good one, it probably will be.
If it's a good one, it will be. Would like the committee administrator to be the recipient of these. They don't have to be amendments finished, but conceptual amendments, because we've got to get our hands around all of these issues and get them on one page.
Yeah.
And the sooner we do that, the better.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, just one thing, because several, after Senator Bates and I mentioned it, have mentioned measurement standards. I don't want anybody to get trapped into think we're just talking about measurements for the exchange. We want a fairly narrow list. systemically. So.
Yeah, a good point. The measurements we're talking about are really what we get in transformation, not about what insurance companies are going to do. I mean, there's two different measurements here.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to get away from a widget world into an outcomes world. So.
And we very much invite the participation of our colleagues from the House with respect to ideas and recommendations. Representative Hoyle. Hoyle. Excuse me.
You're being summoned by the chair.
Sorry.
Representative Hoyle, Representative Kenmer, and our
group.
We invite your recommendations for amendments as well. So, and as we all know, this bill will go up to the
We've got a committee working
Senate
set up tomorrow.
Committee,
I can't
and then we'll be moving
if it's at that
to Ways
time
and
or
Means.
Not.
So,
yeah, thank you.
So
trying to
spike
us
so
that we're
policy
not
rule
forming
the House. Well, thank you very much. We're going to make it out of here in time.
Eyes
and we're going to close the hearing.
Scheduled.